Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. If you go outside your, if you live in Jacksonville, go outside and look to the west. You will see a huge double rainbow. I just stepped out the front door not even 30 seconds ago and saw it myself. It's been going on for like a good 10, 12 minutes thus far. It is so beautiful. But you know what? When you see it, though, it makes you think of the promises of God. It's just really fabulous. You got to go outside. If I wasn't doing a radio show right now, I would be outside looking at the rainbow and just watching it. It's actually become more intense over the last 10 minutes, so it's like a long-lasting one. Really, really pretty. One of the things that has fascinated me here lately is just watching the pictures, or looking at the pictures that I see on the internet of these infrared pictures of the universe from the James Webb Telescope. And if I'm not mistaken, they've discovered what they believe is maybe 2,000 plus planets in the universe that could probably sustain life. Now, I'm not telling you what to think about that, and I'm not trying to direct you in a certain direction, but the way they know these planets could be rocky planets that could have life on them is, number one, that they detect water. I didn't look the scripture up, but there is a scripture that says everything that was created was made out of water. You remember Genesis, where water covered everything. Okay. The other thing that they look for with the telescope, and I really don't know the technology, how they do it exactly, but I'm sure they have a very precise way of measuring sodium levels. So they know if they can find salt and water, then they can find life. I don't remember which planet, Jupiter or Saturn. It's one of them, one of those big ones. There is a moon that has salt water on it. And, of course, they think this could lead to life. Of course, without water and salt, you can't have life. What I wanted to do is just spend just a little bit of time this morning. And the number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Just in case you want to call me on the phone. Well, yesterday I was reading a little piece of research about sodium in the skin. And of course, I know you know this, but if you were to go for a long walk out in this really, really humid weather, I mean, let's just face it, it's just a little bit above 65 degrees Fahrenheit right now here in East Texas. As a matter of fact, during the right time of the day, it could easily be 103 or 104. Which may not be the best time to go for a walk or to bale hay, but I realize life has to go on. But you're going to have salt in order to maintain the integrity of your skin. And let me give an example. You know, I kind of make jokes about this, but you know where I'm coming from. You drive by a pasture, you see cattle out there licking on a salt block or a mineral block, and of course, I haven't looked into each and every one of them, but if you go to the right store that sells these, there could be a white salt block. There could be a yellow one. There's one that's red. There's one that seems to be more brown. I don't know the exact mineral makeup, but I would imagine the very thing that causes one salt block to be white versus another one that would be brown or red would be the mineral content. I kind of look at the one that's yellow and say, hey, it's probably got a lot of sulfur in it. Well, how are those cows going to be able to function without minerals or salt? Well, the answer is they can't. And so years ago, there was a very interesting study where they looked at mice. And I realize there's a little bit of cruelty to this, but I would much rather them use mice to test these agents on instead of a human baby. So here's what they did. They had a... They went to a mouse condominium. I'm just joking. They went to a place where they could have a sterile environment and they could test, which I don't know if you know this or not. Quite often, these mice that are bred for the purpose of testing of drugs or chemicals, they are bred to exactly live a set number of days. they want all variables being equal. So if they give every mouse the same Purina mouse chow, they give them the same water, they have the same living environment, these mice are going to live to be about 620 days. That's just a rough number. If I'm wrong about that, but you get the gist of it. I'm just saying they live exactly a set time. So if a mouse is exactly 610 days old in this laboratory setting, you know it's got about 10 days to live. You with me on that? Well, they took a group of mice and they injected them with what's called a lethal dose of staph. And so when you start thinking about staph, you start thinking about, well, that's a bacterial infection. I don't want anything to do with it. Isn't that resistant to antibiotics? And doesn't that lead to severe boils or sepsis, which is like a bad infection of the blood or the fluids of the body? And you're going, yeah, I don't want anything to do with that. You remember the story in the Bible about King Hezekiah. He had an issue with boils. And of course, when I think about one of the plagues, wasn't there a plague of boils? Could you imagine how miserable a human being could be if they had boils? I think when the Philistines returned the ark that they had captured in battle back to the Israelites, or when they sent it back on that cart that was brand new with two milk cows that have never been used to carry a wagon, that was the two things they gave back as a sin offering. Is a golden image, I guess a golden, I started to say a clay model, but it was made of gold, of boils, and also of mice. Well, I start to think about that and go, well, I wonder if that's what they were plagued with, boils and mice. Well, if you have boils, you don't want any of that action. That's bad. But going back to the study on the mice, what they did was researchers, they took and they injected a number of mice with a staph infection. Okay? And when they injected them with a staph infection, every one of them died. You got that? And so when they did the autopsy on the small mice, they could see specifically which organs and which tissues within their body that the staph infection would go to. Now, they came back and did the study one more time, but this time it was really, really interesting, and this is kind of what I want you to grasp here. In the next study, they did the same exact thing, but before they injected them with the staph infection, they allowed the mice to lick a salt block. All they did was just put a salt block. You don't have to tell mice, lick this 3 times a day. That's like the owl going, how many licks does it take to get to the center of... Never mind. Y'all don't remember that commercial from the 1970s. Anyway, the mice that were allowed to have access to salt, what they noticed was the moment they were injected, they really started craving salt. It's almost as if they knew, this is what I must do if I'm going to help myself overcome the infection. And guess what happened? The mice this time, they lived once they were given the injection of the staph infection. And so these mice, they went ahead and harvested them, which means they put them to sleep and did an autopsy. They didn't die, though. Well, they did die after the autopsy. But they noticed something interesting about the salt. The ones that were allowed to lick the salt block, all the salt tended to surround the staph infection or the boils. So under a microscope, it was like a crystalline, crusty layer of salt around each and every boil. And I thought to myself, isn't that fascinating? So when the James Webb telescope is looking for life on a planet that's 1 million light years away, well, they're looking for salt and they're looking for water. Well, what I want to do is, let me at least tell you some of the things that you could see day in, day out. Now, by the way, in order to hold fluid in the body, you've got to be able to keep moisture exactly in your cells. Every good chemical reaction takes place in the presence of water. And one of the roles of salt is to do that. It acts as electrolyte, which means it has this electrical charge to it. So anytime that you have an older person that starts getting a little bit loopy, they don't think real correctly, they may talk to imaginary people in the corner of the room, you just wonder, are they low in salt? Most likely, yes. Here's some of the symptoms that may indicate that you have a greater need for salt. Have you ever heard of cold extremities? That means your hand or your feet, they stay perpetually cold. What if your urine turns dark? You might need some salt. If you ever pinch the skin and it seems kind of sticky, or you can press on the skin and it leaves an indentation, that would be one indication that you might be low in salt. Some people, they have this greatly reduced urine output, and they go, oh my goodness, I just don't urinate at all. Or in their armpit, they don't really sweat. Or their tongue feels like it's perpetually dry. The other one that I look at, and this one's simple. If you ever look at it, and I'm just going to say an older person, this is not offensive. I see it on younger people too. If you look at some broken blood vessels around their ankle, these are going to be more surface veins where the blood looks like it's a bit darker, which that's a different topic right there. But anyway, just for the sake of conversation, you can take your thumb or your finger and you can press over those superficial veins that are right there at the surface of the skin, and you can literally push the blood out of them. And when you push the blood out, you just, after 5 seconds, you take your finger off and you just say, how long does it take for the blood to fill back up? And if it takes 2 seconds or longer, that's one indication their fluid dynamics or their sodium levels are a little bit off. The other way that this used to be done, I'm doing it to myself right now, you just take your thumb and press into the fingernail of your opposite hand or your other hand. So if you take your right thumb and press into the nail bed of your left index finger like I'm doing right now, you release it and you try to find out how long does it take for the color to return back to pink after it's being pinched for about 5 seconds. Well, if it takes 2 seconds or longer, that's one classic, very old school test to see if somebody's low in sodium. Well, what if you don't experience those things? What if you're sitting down and you stand up quick and all of a sudden you feel just a little bit lightheaded or dizzy, like you're going to pass out? That's a sign of low sodium right there. Or the other thing, it's big. I think you've heard me discuss this before. Probably 90% of all the heart issues and the heart problems that people have are going to be when the resting pulse rate is above 81 beats a minute. Some authorities say 82, but I'm just going to say 81 because I've read that from many studies that I've looked at. So if you're at rest and your heart rate is 81 beats a minute, well, that's one of the things you find if you do not have enough salt to meet the basic needs of your body, because your heart always begins to race when you're low in salt. What if you're thirsty? That could be another indication. Now, this is one thing I have come across. I want to share this with you just for a moment. I know that, let me see if I can find it here. Okay, here we go. The big fear is that if you consume a certain amount of salt, your blood pressure is going to become elevated, you're going to have radical problems, and you're going to die from a stroke or a heart attack. Okay. What I want to do is I want to give you one solution right here. The thing of it is, the average person is going to need somewhere between 1 1/3 added teaspoons to 2 2/3. That's almost a tablespoon of salt a day just to function. Of course, there's a lot of factors. And the heat, most men, because they have more sweat glands than women do, they're going to sweat and perspire. Although women can sweat and perspire also. But if you don't replace the salt that you're losing, your heart is going to work harder. So if you just have this normal habit of checking your pulse rate, if your heart rate is above 82 beats a minute, well then you're not in no good place. We want it to be quite a bit lower. I'd be happy with 72 or 62. when I was reading about the most useful foods of all time that with people that suffer from hypertension, celery was at the top of the list. Well, to me, this is so interesting because I always think that one of the aspects of celery, it's one of the best profiles of natural sodium from any plant that you get your hand on. Of course, it's sodium that the plant, the celery itself, is able to absorb and assimilate and utilize from the soil. You know, when you eat a plant like celery, or you eat a potato, it is so interesting, the mineral content. You got to have healthy soil to have healthy plants. And if you have healthy soil that's abundant in minerals and nutrients and the vast microbiome of the soil, then the chances are you're going to have pretty good health. One of the interesting things about celery is it contains a substance called 3-N-butylphthalide. That's spelled P-H-T-H-A-L-A-I-D-E. 3-N-butylphthalide. It's been shown to lower blood pressure. Now, in an animal study, just a very small amount of this compound, the 3-N-butylphthalide, that comes from celery, well, it lowered blood pressure in animals by about 12 to 14%. Now, that may not sound impressive, but let's just say, for example, that you wake up in the morning and you check your blood pressure and it's 150 over 80, which if I take 150 times 0.12 equals 18, well, what if your blood pressure just relatively quickly went from an average of 150 for your systolic down to 132? And that's without blood pressure medication. Well, wouldn't you say that's pretty impressive? Now, the other thing is, they showed that when they gave these animals the celery, it also lowered cholesterol by about 7%. Now, when it comes to the equivalent for a human being, as in an adult, you can kind of break it down to 4 ribs of celery. And the thing of it is, you can incorporate this in the food that you're eating. You could say, I want to get a big green salad today. Well, 4 ribs of celery may be a lot, but you could always juice it. I'm telling you, like a masticating juicer with celery, it will chew it up and spit it out. And who benefits? You do. So, this research about the celery on lowering blood pressure, it was prompted by the father of one of the researchers. Here's what happened. This guy's average blood pressure, the father, I don't know if he was elderly, but let's just say he's probably like in his upper 50s, maybe even higher than that. But when this man took his blood pressure, it would average 158 over 96. And so the systolic blood pressure, that top number, the systolic at 158, that tells me there's a fair amount of stress on the heart. It is working a lot harder than what it should. It is not getting the rest. It's not on cruise control. But it's having to really work on pumping blood throughout the arteries. It has to push extra hard. The lower number on this gentleman was 96. So as a general rule, that lower number, the 96, that's called your diastolic pressure. Now that gives us a very good indication of what's going on with the kidneys, which I know you've heard me talk about this before, but your kidneys probably play one of the biggest roles in the entire body of any system that regulates your blood pressure. I mean, after all, your kidneys have all these very precise sensors that constantly lick and taste and measure the blood to find out if your blood components are just right, if your blood's moving the way it should, and if it needs to make an adjustment, it does, if it's healthy. So this gentleman that ate a quarter of a pound of celery a day just for 1 week, his starting blood pressure was 158 over 96. Guess what it lowered to? 118 over 82. I haven't done the math on that, but that is a very significant drop. And so you ask the question, well, what's in celery? Well, I just told you, the 3-N-butylphthalide. And so that compound in celery, besides the sodium also, it was able to change the dynamics of the man's blood pressure. That's pretty impressive right there without drugs, don't you think? Okay. If you would like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line once again open. It's officially open. The phone number here at the station is 903 586-5257. Please ask me whatever question you want, especially as it relates to my bias, which is finding natural ways to help the body heal. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
I have one question. What can I do about plantar fasciitis?
Did you say plantar fasciitis?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me give you about three or four ideas. Number one.
Hold on, let me get my pen.
There you go. Okay. One of the compounds that causes kidney stones to form is called calcium oxalate. Sometimes it's called oxalic acid. If a person was eating lots of pork products, if they were drinking heavy amounts of beer and alcohol and wine, and they had lots of sugar in their diet, I'd say they probably have gout crystals forming in the bottom of their feet. But outside that, what I'm usually looking at, one of the culprits is called calcium oxalate or oxalic acid. So this is like a different concept, but when it comes to plantar fasciitis, I have examined and tested so many people that it's usually one or the other that's contributing to it. So your kidneys are one of the most sophisticated filtration systems inside of the body, and what they're supposed to do is they remove any debris or waste from the blood that could harm you. I mean, if they're working right. And so when somebody has plantar fasciitis, one of the things that I do is I just take my thumb and run it over that arch of the foot. And a lot of times I can feel these very tender, painful, itty-bitty bumps in the plantar fascia. Well, what I always think those are is crystallized debris that's forming. Now, my point is this. Whether it's uric acid or oxalic acid, those, they look like razor blades and knives. They look like shards of broken glass. So when a person has that buildup in the arch of their foot, they put their foot on the bare ground first thing in the morning, getting out of bed, and it hurts. So here's the ways to take care of it. Number one, if I could convince you to start eating one green salad a day, that would be a move in the right direction. Because what you're getting from the salad is you're getting all these alkaline ash minerals, and alkaline ash minerals with water, they help scrub your blood clean. Maybe one of them's called potassium and magnesium. The other thing that you can do very simply is just start the process of walking with your bare feet on the grass. Of course, that may not be grass like you're used to. It may be really brown and crunchy right now just because of the time of year it is. So if you can walk barefoot for 30 minutes a day, that will help break all that stuff up where your body can reabsorb it. The next thing is you could just take plain Jane lemon juice. So if you take a real lemon, cut it, get a wedge of it, and just rub the lemon juice all over the bottom of the foot that's hurting badly, that will start the process of acting like a solvent to help dissolve and break down those crystals that are in the arch of your foot. The next thing is, when you go to bed every night, just take plain Jane castor oil. Rub it all over the bottom of the foot. Cover your foot with a sock and go to sleep. The other things that just really help are just stretching the foot. There's everything from ankle rolls. I like that foot rolling technique where I pretend the longitudinal arch of the foot's like a rolling pin, and I just roll back and forth. I'm just trying to break up that crystallized waste and debris. And so when a person's on a diet that's based on junk food and sugar, that's probably the easiest way for that to start to form. But walking barefooted in lemon juice and castor oil is going to go a long way to help you. Now, the other day I was listening to a sports talk channel, and they were talking about modern-day sports for teenagers is radically changed over the last 60 years. And they're saying now if you want to have any hope to play Major League Baseball, then when you're real young, your parents are going to have to drive you to this tournament and that tournament, and you're going to join this league and that league. But what I thought was kind of comical, they said these kids now, they're actually, after every practice and every game, they're drinking cherry juice because it gets rid of inflammation. And I thought to myself, really, that's a thing? Well, evidently it is a thing. So if you were to take about 20 to maybe 30 frozen cherries a day, and the reason I prefer frozen cherries is because they pick them when they're ripe, It's like yesterday a man told me he bought some fresh cherries, but they don't taste any good. And I said, well, I know why. They picked them 4 weeks ago before they were actually ripe. And then it took them a long time to get to Texas. So if you would eat frozen cherries contain a compound that is so good at removing crystallized waste and debris and inflammation from the feet. Does that sound good?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The other thing is, I've actually suffered from plantar fasciitis. I know when it was, too. I remember it. I was in college, and I was literally running myself ragged because I was terrified I would not be able to finish all the requirements in the clinic. Boy, was I wrong. We had exactly 1 year to complete all the essential tasks. But after I listened to all the genius upperclassmen tell me it was impossible, you'll never be able to do it, the school and the hospital is too harsh, and I believed it at first, so I worked my tail off for 1 month. I finished everything in 1 month, but at the expense of, I ran myself ragged, and boy, did my feet hurt. But it was my own fault. I literally stressed myself to the max. And the point is when you become stressed, your body becomes very depleted in nutrients. Or maybe a different way of saying it is, when you want your body to repair itself and rejuvenate and to heal and to get rid of inflammation, well, you got to have nutrition to do that. But if you're under stress, you might burn through all those nutrients at a faster rate than what you can replenish them. And that's what I did. But it was a good lesson for me. I learned not to listen to other people. Anyway, is that a good start?
Yes, sir. That's a good start. One last question. I was told by a nurse that you could actually take a golf ball and rub it under the...
Absolutely. That's perfect. Just put a golf ball on the carpet on the floor while you're sitting on the couch or in a chair and just roll it all around the foot. That sounds good.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate your phone call today. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, there is a phone line once again open. We got plenty of time today. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. You know, it's kind of funny, but a lot of times when a woman goes to get her toes done, you know, toenails, she'll say one of the best things about it is getting the foot massage or where they massage the leg. But then again, I've heard so many women tell me that, do you realize how painful that is? I can't stand someone touching my feet because it hurts so bad. Well, what I want you to consider is you might be just a little toxic and there may be too much crystallized waste, and we need to scrub all that out of you and clean you up. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, Dr. Morgan. I have a hernia in my stomach area, and I was wondering if there was any way to reduce that or get rid of it.
Is it a real small one?
Yes.
Okay, there's a type of
hernia. I can feel it. I can feel it when I'm rubbing my right side of my stomach.
Okay, well, here's what I want you to write down, or just think about. There's a type of a hernia. It's usually referred to as a sports hernia.
Uh-huh.
And a sports hernia is one of the hernias that a person can fix if they do exercises. And so here's an example. If you were to type in how to fix a sports hernia without surgery, there's probably a bunch of articles and descriptions that you'll find on the internet. But one of the unique maneuvers from the exercise system called yoga is called the Cobra maneuver. That's been shown in studies to help correct abdominal hernias if they're small.
Okay.
Now, obviously, I have a textbook in my house written from the 1940s. It is horrible. It's all about hernias. And you know why it's horrible? It shows these pictures in black and white that once you see them, you can't unsee them. Which means it shows hernias that only it would be an emergency surgical procedure to repair those. It's just unbelievable. Okay. So if yours is very mild, that's what you're looking at. The second thing that I want you to consider is they sell these little belts on websites like Amazon or Walmart.com. where you can actually put a little bit of compression on there while you're trying to repair that area. And then number three, do you know what collagen is?
Yes.
Okay. Collagen is really hard to beat.
Okay.
You're getting an Amber Alert, right?
I'm sorry, sir.
Was that an Amber Alert or just a phone call?
No, it was an alarm.
Oh. Like, time to call Dr. Morgan and ask him questions, right?
Yes.
And so that's one of the... The other thing that I like is I like just rubbing castor oil over any injured area in the body. And one of the advantages of castor oil is it helps improve lymphatic blood flow and circulation to the area. And that's really what you want, because your circulatory system, it carries oxygen and nutrients. And so if you take collagen, it's going to go exactly right to where that weakness in the abdominal wall is.
Okay.
There's a condition called diastasis recti, where when a woman who's been pregnant, the baby does it on purpose. I'm just joking. The baby doesn't do it on purpose. The baby kind of splits the middle abdominal wall, and it creates a hernia. Well, there's a whole system of exercises. What's the woman's name? It's Katie... I can't remember Katie's last name. But if you were to go to a website that sells books, I'm just giving you an example, like Amazon, you could type in, you get under books that relate to like health and healing or exercise, you could say natural hernia repair. I'm just talking off the top of my head. Katie Bowman, that's her name, Katie Bowman. But if you looked up her books, she's got this whole system of exercise on how you correct diastasis recti, where the baby splits the mama's stomach open and she's got like a bulge from a hernia. But she's got a system of exercises, and they're so interesting. But it just goes back to the basic concept that I know you believe in. God has designed the body to remarkably repair itself, sometimes against all odds, if you just give it half a chance.
Okay. All right.
So that's what you're looking
walking,
at. Oh, good.
Done any other exercise other than just walking.
Well, I think that's a good choice.
I'll try to do that.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for your phone call. I appreciate you. Bye-bye. All right, if you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line once again open at 903-586-5257. You know, the inevitable aspect of aging is you're not going to make it off this planet without having something happen to you. I mean, doesn't it say that there's going to be trials and tribulations in the Bible? Of course. Good morning. How are you today?
Great. Dr. Morgan, red wine, how much, and, what do you think of red wine?
Well, one of the greatest aspects of red wine is it contains a polyphenol compound called resveratrol. Have you ever heard that term before?
Yes, I heard you use it.
Dr. Morgan, red wine, how much?
Oh, you got your radio on. There's that delay.
Yeah, I'm trying to get it turned down right now.
Okay, good, Doc. Good job. Well, if you're in great working order, you could probably tolerate a little bit of red wine, maybe 4 to 6 ounces. But most people, over time, I don't really think they can tolerate it real well.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. I mean, I've seen, how many people do you know of that drink alcohol?
I know several, yeah.
Well, it's just so hard on the body. If you wanted to cause a problem called leaky gut, drinking alcohol every day might could do that. But then again, I mean, if you look at the long-term studies, people that drink a little bit of red wine, usually they live longer than those that don't. So, I mean, that's kind of the balls in your court on that deal. But the reason why I said resveratrol, a person could literally take a capsule of what's called resveratrol, and they would get the tremendous benefits without the alcohol. Or what some people do is they let the glass stay open after they pour the glass and let the alcohol sort of evaporate.
Uh-huh.
Yesterday, I had a young lady come to see me that's a waitress for, I would say, maybe a upper-end or high-end luxury restaurant. And I was asking her, I said, okay, what is the average price of a ribeye steak there? And she said, oh, it's $80. And I said, well, what about lobster? She said, well, that one for a small lobster is $65. And I said, well, what about wine? She said, well, we have this new wine that we're about to release from the year 2010 or 11, something like that. And I said, well, what does it cost? She said, $200 a bottle. I thought to myself, okay, well, what does the dessert cost? She said, $17. Anyway, I'm just wasting your time on this deal. Yeah. But she was just telling me that you're not going to get out the door for less than, you know, $100 a person. But anyway. But yeah, red wine, there are studies that shows that it has some health benefit. My concern is a person overdoing it. I guess the reason I'm saying that is it's kind of a raw topic for me when you have family members that can't control alcohol consumption.
Correct.
And so that's my perspective, and so that's where I'm coming from on this.
The lemon juice and all for the kidneys, correct?
Yeah, if you take fresh lemon juice and you add it to like an herbal tea, like green tea or hibiscus tea as an example, what you're doing is the lemon juice over time, it really does act as a very good solvent to help dissolve toxic debris in the body. And I think it helps the kidneys and the liver and the gallbladder work better.
I'm doing the lemon juice for sure. And
yeah, that's good. Water. Good choice.
Keeping a pitcher in the ice box. Another thing, the lemon water, would it offset or would it take the place of the vitamin C? I'm taking 1,000 in the morning, 1,000 in the evening with my other vitamins.
When you take a lemon or a lime, you're getting whole natural vitamin C, which I know you've heard this before, but the reason the British Navy dominated the seven seas is because sailors and their officers, they had a quarter ration, or they had a quarter of a lime every day. Or if they didn't have limes, it would be lemons or some other citrus fruit. But what the issue would be is they learned the only way they were going to be successful on the ocean is if they could keep their men from having scurvy.
Correct.
Which, if you, I've seen about 4 cases of scurvy in 34 years. It is horrible. You just barely touch a person's on their forearm or on their leg, and it leaves a bruise because the blood vessels just break and they have so much bruising and bleeding all over. And so when you get a lime or lemon, you're getting whole food vitamin C, which I think that's highly valuable. What you're getting in a supplement is most likely called ascorbic acid. That's not exactly the same as vitamin C, but it's got a close association to it. You don't have one without the other. So yeah.
I guess what I'm asking, can I substitute? Can I just do away with that supplemental vitamin C now?
Well,
that I'm
I don't know what the integrity of your arteries and your veins are.
Yeah.
Do you have great blood flow and circulation, or do you have issues with your blood flow, like high blood pressure? Are you taking diuretics? What's going on?
I had a little bit of high blood pressure, but it was diet, and I corrected it. I've got it back down where it's supposed to be.
Oh,
and,
good job.
I'm watching what I'm eating because I'm listening to you.
Well, here, I'm going to try to answer the question a little bit differently. If you set your mind like Flint that you're going to put real things that God has made into your body to provide the nutrients, that's the foundation of health right there. And so if you're squeezing fresh lemon juice or, you know, one of the things that I've learned to rely on, just because it works so well, if a person is sick or even if they're not sick, If you want to vastly bolster immune function, I love the idea of taking 2 carrots and 1 whole lemon and just running it through the juicer and drinking it. Now, when I say a whole lemon, I mean you take a paring knife and peel the outer part of the rind and just leave as much of the pit. But that's going to give you a huge bolstering or boost of whole vitamin C right there and vitamin A.
Okay. One other question, and I'll let you go. The super beets, what is your take on those?
Well, beets contain compounds that are so good at helping the body to heal. So I like them.
Okay. I'm on the right path. I believe it.
Yes, you are. Good job.
You, and I appreciate your show. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. 903-586-5257. Well, I thought I hung up the phone. I need a master's degree in pushing buttons on the control board here so I can manage this a little bit better. Now, and let me say it a different way also. I'm never trying to overpromise the effectiveness of lemon juice or limes, but I'm telling you right now, If you were to do like a literature search on how valuable is the lemon to the human body or the lime, it's extremely valuable. Some people have learned, sometimes the hard way, that if they don't take good care of their bodies, they're going to end up in a really bad situation later in life. And so whatever you do to invest in your health right now, it's probably like one of the best choices you're going to make. But if you could, if all you did, and actually, let me go backwards for a second. I mentioned earlier about green tea. Just saying this might be one application where you could squeeze lemon juice in that. Green tea is phenomenal stuff. Even if you just drank one cup a day, you're going to be better off than if you didn't drink any. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you?
I am good, thank you.
Good, good. I have a question. I think the guy before just touched on it with the lemon bit. I've been diagnosed with a lesion on a kidney. And thank you, Jesus. They say it's like a grape at the end of a balloon. It's not inside and entwined in anything. It's just hanging off there.
Are they calling it a cyst?
No.
Are they calling it a nodule?
No, he called it a lesion.
Okay.
So I'm guessing more nodule lesion, but he definitely called it a lesion.
Okay.
And they're concerned. So it has to come out. And I wondered about anything, and it has grown slightly. I mean, very slightly, from 1.8 to 2.6 or 2.3, somewhere around there.
Does that mean centimeters?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Still, so it's almost an inch.
Right. Okay. And on a kidney, that's pretty big.
Yeah. Which kidney is it?
It's my right kidney. Now, my left kidney upper, it does have a cyst, and they're not concerned about it. And I'm like, when you're in there, why don't you just take it off? You know, if it's there, get rid of it.
Well, that's probably different. The cyst is probably located within the kidney, not hanging on the edge of it like the lesion is.
Okay. So,
but they could get a skill, a saw, and cut it open and get it out that way. No, I'm joking. Okay.
So questions are, I'm going to be receiving a lot of CAT scans because of figuring out the blood vessels, the everything else that entailed in the surgery. And I remember a long time ago you speaking about something that really helps cleanse that out of your body.
Mm-hmm. One of the studies that I read years ago, they showed that if a person, and what we're talking about here is, what do you do to help offset the negative consequences of, you know, X-rays or radiation?
Correct.
It's just kind of like if you were near the surface of the sun, the radiation would just burn you up. That wouldn't be good. Okay, but what they used in that study, they just used wheatgrass, which, you know, if you think about wheatgrass, what color is it?
Green.
Exactly, and I'm thinking that's going to be called chlorophyll.
Okay.
Chlorophyll is one of the greatest detoxifiers that human beings ever come in contact with. That's one of the reasons why if you've got a problem and you're not really sure what to do about it, it's not a bad choice to start taking either fat-soluble chlorophyll or a type of algae that grows in the ocean called chlorella. Have you ever heard of chlorella?
You know, I used to take chlorella.
Yeah, the stuff is almost like black green. It's so dark.
Yeah, little tiny pills.
Exactly. And so
37.
Yeah, but when you put the chlorella into your mouth, then it starts going to work because that's what chlorophyll does. Chlorophyll is very good at helping absorbing toxic waste. And so I'm not trying to be negative about this, but let's just talk about the kidneys for a second. The kidneys, literally, they keep you alive every single day by filtering out toxins and impurities.
Right.
And so anytime that there's a cyst or a lesion in the kidney, well, what I think of is I think about, okay, we're living in a toxic world. How do we help the kidneys do a better job of detoxifying? And so I think it was 2 days ago, there was this article I came across, and it was just real short and sweet. It was saying the best thing that you could do after exercising is taking and eating some watermelon. I thought to myself, you know what? Watermelon is really good for the kidneys. It helps wash them clean. And so whether it's watermelon or eating grapes, I'm such a fan of grapes when it comes to healing the kidneys. And so if you say, what do we do to heal the kidneys? Well, grapes are so hard to beat.
Okay.
The other thing that you've already brought up is an excellent idea, the idea of consuming lemon water or lemon juice.
Do that. Mm-hmm.
And so if it were me, I would probably jump into buying a juicer if you don't have one.
Okay.
Do you have one?
No, I don't. I have a machine that makes like, it doesn't make pure juice because I
no,
like
and,
the,
and that would be,
I like the whole part.
You could use that in a pinch. That would be fine.
Okay.
What you're doing is when you take a juicer, you're basically removing all the liquid. And so that's a little bit different mechanism. I think it's better in this situation. That's just my opinion.
Okay.
But if you were to come up with a large amount of money, like $85, you could probably buy a masticating juicer that would serve you really, really well.
Okay.
I like them. And so this is what I would think of if it were me. If you could do this once a day, just take your knife after you wash the lemon off and just remove the outer part of the yellow rind.
Mm-hmm.
Leave as much of the pith. Now, with a masticating juicer, you're most likely going to have to cut the lemon down in size to make it fit through the throat of the juicer.
Mm-hmm.
Because the masticating juicer, it just kind of moves slow. But I like them, though. They're just so efficient, and they don't generate heat, which means they tend to preserve the nutrients in the juice much better. But
nope.
Could you imagine what would happen if you just put one small beet, and like, you know, the guy talked earlier about the super beets, but
mm-hmm.
if you would take a lemon and maybe a carrot and a couple ribs of celery, the one thing that I really want to sell you on is called ginger.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good job. I appreciate your enthusiasm. So
mm-hmm.
if you took a little bit of a chunk of ginger and just put in there, that masticating juicer is going to squeeze every last drop of ginger juice. But this is one of the things you can do to kind of start scrubbing and healing your kidneys.
Okay, good.
So you've got that. The
yep.
The other thing that I'm a huge fan of, and we're talking about what do we do to help offset the negative effects of X-rays or radiation. Well, the problem with radiation is this. It generates what's called a huge amount of free radicals.
Right.
Have you ever heard that term before?
Oh, yeah.
And so you're looking for things called antioxidants.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like you've heard me talk about before, when you consume green tea or you have the dark chocolate that's like 85% cacao, it actually provides you with what are called polyphenols. And these have high antioxidant abilities to protect you. One of my favorites of all time is just pomegranate.
Oh, wonderful.
This last week, I had a guy come to see me. We were talking about the prostate, and he asked me a very specific question. He said, what about prostate cancer and pomegranate? I said, okay, let's look it up. And so I think the third study that came up on the computer or my laptop was one where they took mice. And these mice, they implanted a very aggressive form of a prostate cancer, which I'm not trying to get in too much detail, but there's some cancers that are very slow-growing, and there's some that are just very, very aggressive, and they take off like a wildfire. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Well, they took the super aggressive ones from a human being prostate cancer, and they implanted them into a mouse prostate. I'm guessing they had teeny tiny tweezers. But anyway, when they put them in there, the only question they were asking is, what is the very best thing that we can give these mice that will slow the growth of the cancer? The study was not based on killing the cancer, getting rid of it, just slowing it, because I think this cancer is just one of those that's just hard to stop once it gets going. But guess what they found out was the very best at slowing the growth of the cancer in these mice that had this implantation of aggressive, you know, human prostate cancer cells? It was pomegranate.
Wow.
And the rest of the study said this right here, because I asked the question, well, how did they give them pomegranate? Did they plant a tree in their cage? Well, the answer is no. What they did was they just gave them pomegranate powder.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And so I'm looking at the study, and I'm going, okay, that's the way they gave it to them. They just took pomegranate juice, and I think they just dehydrated it and put it in a powder, and they probably added it to their water. So that was their methodology of getting, you know, pomegranate. Yeah. Ma'am?
Would that give you more concentration of the pomegranate than eating pomegranates, which I just love?
No. I'm not saying that. I think that's good that you're eating pomegranate. This is just one way that you might be able to make it work just in case pomegranates aren't in season.
Oh, gotcha.
So Just like when I was a boy, I used to climb that large pomegranate tree in front of Aunt Lola and Aunt Vernie's, home in Roy City, Texas. And so I wonder if that tree's still there. That was amazing. Let me see. I'm 58, so that would be, oh, my goodness, that would be like 50-something years ago. Time goes by fast. But, no, the pomegranate, the fresh pomegranate, that's awesome if you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people take the fresh pomegranate and they freeze it to try to preserve them, and that's fine too. But pomegranate powder, that gives almost everyone a very simple, straightforward, easy solution for modern times.
Very good.
So it's only an idea. Now, if it were me, I'm just telling you straight up what I would do. We've got to target the healing and the repair of your kidneys, if I can say it that way. I hope it's not offensive what I'm saying.
Oh, not at all.
All right, thank you. It's not like I'm saying, hey, you got a damaged kidney, what's wrong with you? That's not what I mean.
I do.
So what I almost always refer to is it's called protomorphogens. And I'm not trying to be crude here, but they get them from cow kidneys. And some people are highly offended by that. I'm not. I think cows are good for us. And so there's a product that you could use called Rena Food by Standard Process.
Okay.
And yes, it is made from the kidney of a cow, but it contains a protomorphogen. And what those do is they target, how do we help the body heal and repair the kidney? Now, some of this has to do with your immune system. Because what your immune system is supposed to do is supposed to keep the kidney under constant surveillance and do its job.
Mm-hmm.
Probably what I would do is I would take a little bit of N-acetylcysteine every single day. And then by looking at the research on a herb called ginkgo biloba, it's been shown to greatly enhance blood flow to the kidney. But then again, if somebody did like a lab test, like if the doctor does a lab test on you, a blood test, and they have this one marker called capital G, capital F, capital R, that's just an acronym, G, FR, that stands for glomerular filtration rate.
Okay.
When that number gets lower and lower, it very precisely signifies there's more and more damage to the kidneys. And so if somebody has a GFR of exactly 72.8, one way to interpret that is the kidneys are only working at 72% efficiency. But what it means to me is there is significant damage to the kidney itself. And what we want to do is we want to focus on how do we repair that damage. And that's where the entire topic of improving the circulatory system or healing your blood really comes into play. So going back to pomegranate just for a second.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to look at research and just Google the topic of pomegranate and blood flow and circulation, you would be amazed by the research that's been done. Because pomegranate contains one of the highest natural concentrations of what are called polyphenols. These are those antioxidants we talked about to protect you from radiation and from other damage and from toxins. And so in your situation, we want to target how do we help the kidneys to heal. Now, I know this sounds funny, but walking barefoot has been shown to improve kidney function.
I've got that mastered.
That's not going to be hard for you?
No.
Now, would you go walking on the beach today at 4 o'clock? Are you going to wear sandals or just go on the white sand barefoot?
Well, close to the water, I'll be barefoot. Up by the sand, I'll wear...
Now, are you worried about great white sharks jumping out of the water to attack you?
Never.
Okay, just checking.
Just hot sand burning my toes.
Today, you might have burned feet, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you call hot footing it?
I guess so.
Yeah. Could you make a video for us? It'd probably show you moving really, really fast across the sand, right?
Very quickly. Very quickly.
Okay. So one of the main... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. You go ahead.
I was just going to say, you've got to understand that refined sugar in soft drinks
is
about the greatest way of all time just to wreck the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
So if I could convince you to just consider one big green salad a day, you could cut up cucumbers and avocados and lots of onions and all these different mixed greens, and you could shred a carrot, and you could put some sauerkraut in there, and You could cut up an avocado. Did I already talk about an avocado? But anyway, you could make this green salad, and it would just do your kidneys a huge favor. It really would.
Okay.
And then there's baking soda. Do you know what baking soda is?
Yes, but I haven't heard this one before. This is good, baking soda.
Okay, no, good. Thanks for saying that. You're encouraging me to keep going, so I'll keep going. But baking soda has been shown when there's extensive damage to the kidney, it's very soothing and healing. It prevents them from getting worse.
Oh.
So, and I ask almost everybody, I say, well, did your doctor tell you that? And, you know, sometimes doctors do, and I go, wow, that is a good doctor trying to teach a person how to save their kidneys. But I would say, for the most part, once there's damage to the kidneys, there's very few doctors that actually come up with a plan like, this is what we're going to do to greatly help your kidneys to heal. But like anything else, you've got to get enough oxygen and blood flow. And so the way to do that, it's called exercise. So when you go for a walk twice a day, or you ride your bicycle, or in your case, you do sprinting maneuvers on a very, very hot beach, because if you let your foot stay on the sand too long, you'll burn the bottom of it off.
That's right.
Okay, so those are things that are good for the kidneys, and just avoiding sugar like the plague. You
so
just
what do you
have
do with
to.
The baking soda?
What now?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not, you could take anywhere between a half to one teaspoon a day.
Okay.
You can just stir it in a little bit of water and drink it down first thing in the morning.
Perfect.
But I love the idea and the concept of, do you know what the flower called hibiscus is?
I do.
If you were to buy a bag, a big bag of hibiscus tea in little tea bags,
mm-hmm.
You can even buy organic hibiscus tea. If you would start making hibiscus tea several times a day and drinking it, now that will count as water.
Okay.
Now, if you drink coffee and regular tea, that's not going to count as water, because that'll dehydrate you.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, coffee has been shown to cause sodium loss, which means the heart rate usually goes up and blood pressure goes up. But hibiscus tea, it helps correct and heal all those things to preserve them. So hibiscus is good for lowering blood pressure and helping the kidneys to get well.
Okay. Several times a day. Sometimes it's hard to find hibiscus tea.
Well, you're right. And so usually what I'll do is I'll just look for one where the main ingredient is hibiscus. And so
okay. If
the second ingredient is like lemongrass, or if it's something else, I'm okay with that.
Okay, good. Wonderful. Can you, trying to combine and make a smaller, morning footprint out there, baking soda, can I do lemon juice with the baking soda?
I don't see a problem at all. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if you want to just try to make it easier and combine everything at one time, I have no problem with that.
Okay, super.
And then if you want to flush your kidneys out today, I guess you could just have to stop on the side of the road and buy an extra large watermelon.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I know you don't like watermelon, but sometimes you got to just plow through it to help yourself.
I just bought one yesterday.
Oh, look at you. You're willing to do it. All right.
And
that's going to be major torture, isn't it?
I'm just going to eat it. Just
force yourself to take a cold slice of it from the refrigerator and eat it on the spot. You know, there's a lot of people, they really do benefit, I've noticed, if they do a watermelon fast.
Oh, how many days would you recommend?
You could do 3 really, really easily.
Okay.
And literally, you can just eat all. So instead of eating a meal, you could have watermelon. I realize that's kind of a weird concept. But what you're doing is you're trying to give your kidneys a break so your body can do its job, which is to go down and reabsorb that lesion or that cyst.
Gotcha.
All right.
Do you think this could possibly have come about from my blood disorder?
Well, that's always something that you got to consider. What is the blood disorder?
Spherocytosis, hereditary spherocytosis, which just makes me tired, which you can hear it in my voice. I lose the oxygen off my blood vessels or off my...
Well, and see, oxygen is the greatest healing agent in all the universe.
Oh.
It really is.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why water is essential for life, because it's called H2O. It's got oxygen in it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And so what we're doing is, even though we might not cure your genetic issue, we've got to tilt the balance in your favor to make it easier for your body to stay alive and to heal.
I wonder if an oxygen bar, like going to one of those places and breathing in oxygen, would be...
Well, I was going to recommend you join the Navy and just spend your time in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber.
Hyperbaric. Okay. Can you go to those? Or
Well, I wish we could. That would be the... Because if we had that, it would be the greatest healing of all time. I'm sorry. I looked at my clock. I'm totally out of time.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.